was expressing the moral outrage that I feel, and I make no apologies for it.
Biden stands by his words. It's Wednesday, March 30th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Ukrainian doctors' war stories, Pacific Island COVID outbreaks, reducing food waste. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Russia's military says it will fundamentally cut back operations near Ukraine's capital and a northern city, as talks brought a possible deal to end a grinding war into view. Meanwhile, U.S. President Joe Biden's whirlwind diplomatic tour of Europe might be most remembered by his words about Russian President Vladimir Putin. This man cannot remain in power. 2 days after his utterance, Biden clarified that although he won't back down from this sentiment, the U.S. did not plan to take Putin out of office. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House on what this means as this Ukraine conflict enters a second month.
After 3 days of lengthy meetings and delicate negotiations, firm agreements and fervent promises, it all came down to 9 words about Russian President Vladimir Putin.
For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power.
Back in Washington on Monday, Biden defiantly defended his words, but clarified his intent.
I'm not walking anything back. The fact of the matter is I was expressing the moral outrage I felt toward the way Putin is dealing and the actions of this man. Just brutality. Half the children in Ukraine. I had just come from being with those families. But I want to make it clear. I wasn't then, nor am I now, articulating a policy change. I was expressing the moral outrage that I feel, and I make no apologies for it.
But analysts say this is dangerous talk for American diplomacy. Andrew Lowson of the Center for Strategic and International Studies via Zoom.
This is confirming some of the worst suspicions of what the United States really wants in global affairs. I think in terms of the reactions from other countries around the world, the comment was unwelcome. We certainly saw a reaction from other European partners clarifying that the United States should not and cannot be using this kind of escalatory language. And so I think, unfortunately, the comment is one that is going to reverberate still for a number of days and weeks.
Biden, who said he was moved by Ukrainian refugees he met in Poland, stressed that he was not threatening Putin with regime change.
It was expressing my outrage. He shouldn't remain in power. Just like, you know, bad people shouldn't continue to do bad things. But it doesn't mean we have a fundamental policy to do anything to take Putin down in any way.
American Enterprise Institute analyst Leon Aron, a keen follower of the Kremlin, says Putin is likely to shrug off such talk for now.
Putin is a big boy. Remember, he had been called a murderer, and then they smiled at each other and shook hands. I believe that he, in the long run, I don't think it's going to hamper anything. Now, to say that he'll forget it, no, of course he won't. He will not forget it, and he will definitely try to get back at Biden in one way or another, whether rhetorically or in some sort of policy action. But for now, it's not a disaster.
Aron says Putin is unlikely to change course in this brutal conflict, now entering its second month. On Monday, Russian state television aired what it said was the inside of a theater destroyed by Russian bombing on March 16th in the southern city of Mariupol. Civilians sheltering there said they had tied a white flag to the top of the building and painted the word children in large white letters on the ground, visible from the air. Ukrainian officials estimate that about 300 people were killed in that strike. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Biden to host Singapore's Prime Minister at White House. North Korea didn't test monster missile after all, South Korea says. Singapore rejects last appeal of Malaysian man facing death penalty over drug charges. Australia and New Zealand worried by China deal with Solomons. Pakistan's parliament takes up no trust motion against PM Khan. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Wednesday. Since the start of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, at least 128 children have died and 172 others have been wounded in the country, according to Ukraine's Office of the Prosecutor General. The United Nations reports that more than 1,000 civilians have died so far. Despite the constant danger, Ukrainian doctors are fighting to prevent more deaths. For VOA, Maria Proust talked with some about working in wartime.
Despite heavy shelling and with guns in their hands, Ukrainian doctors are saving lives. Doctors say the main children's hospital in Ukraine, Okhmadid, has been shelled a number of times.
Between 5 and 6 o'clock, we heard explosions, about 3 explosions not far from the hospital, so all staff and patients could hear them. Windows shattered, and so did the doors. Our neurology office was destroyed. Right now we can't work there because the ceiling collapsed. But we keep helping people, we keep consulting, we still admit people to hospital, just in other buildings, in other parts of the hospital.
Doctors are pressing on in Mariupol, Sumy, Chernihiv, Kharkiv, and many other cities. Since the start of Russia's invasion, the World Health Organization has counted at least 64 attacks on medical institutions in Ukraine. In Mariupol, Russian forces captured an intensive care hospital and took hostages, according to the Media Initiative for Human Rights.
Every single person who works at the hospital knows what they are doing because the shelling has taken place in many cities already, massive shelling. And everyone knows what working at a hospital entails. They know it can easily become a target.
Most medical professionals work grueling hours for days on end. Others live in hospitals.
When the war started, on the first day, I couldn't get to my workplace. And when I did manage to leave the house, it took me 3 hours to get there. So I decided to just leave at the hospital. We have a shelter here and people who can always help.
Thanks to volunteers and private organizations, members of the hospital staff, at least for now, are getting what they need. Much of the humanitarian aid is coming to hospitals from abroad, including from the US and Europe. Like many Ukrainians, doctors are closer and resolute.
To be honest, I never thought my colleagues and I could unite like this. We are like a large family, but when you are working side by side for days in a row, you realize these are your people, they will help.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization warns that Ukraine's health facilities are stretched beyond capacity as new patients keep coming and humanitarian needs grow. Maria Proust, VOA News, Washington.
Still to come on VOA Asia, some of the last places on Earth to be infected with COVID-19. Happening now in Asia, Shanghai has launched a new central quarantine site to house 6,000 people who have tested positive for coronavirus and are experiencing mild or asymptomatic infections. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. More cases of COVID-19 are being reported in the Pacific as outbreaks worsen in some of the last places on Earth to be infected with the virus. Samoa is extending a nationwide lockdown until April 5th, while a state of public emergency remains in place for Solomon Islands. Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
Since the start of the year, the Pacific Island nations of Kiribati, Tonga, the Solomon Islands, the Cook Islands, and American Samoa have all had their first major waves of COVID-19. Academics blame the spread of the Omicron variant and the reopening of international borders. Daily case numbers are rising in Samoa, an island nation of about 200,000 people, 5,700 kilometres east of Australia. Its main hospital in the capital, Apia, is under increasing pressure as more frontline workers contract the virus. Samoa has reported almost 1,300 coronavirus cases since the pandemic began, according to government data. No deaths have been recorded. Dr. Colin Tukui Tonga, an associate dean at the University of Auckland, says island nations have had time since the start of the pandemic to prepare for outbreaks.
The advantage, of course, of the two-year delay is they're able to test their systems, vaccinate their populations, inform their population. So there's no doubt there's some advantage of being affected down the line as opposed to being one of the early ones. And this has been an advantage for the small islands.
Fiji has recorded 64,000 infections and 800 deaths since the pandemic began, the highest among the region's island nations, according to the World Health Organization. Experts have concerns about the ability of health systems in other parts of Melanesia, including Papua New Guinea and the Solomon Islands, to cope with rising case numbers. The World Health Organization has documented more than 43,000 infections in Papua New Guinea and 640 fatalities. In the Solomon Islands, the WHO has recorded 10,778 COVID-19 cases. 113 people have died. However, some island nations in the Pacific remain COVID-free, including Nauru, Tokelau and Tuvalu. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Finally on VOA Asia, up to 40% of food in the U.S. is discarded. But as VOA's Julie Tabo reports, a company in the Netherlands has come up with technology that can help reduce food waste in industrial kitchens.
As much as 40% of food produced in the U.S. goes uneaten, according to the Natural Resources Defense Council. Most of it ends up in landfills, where it releases massive amounts of methane. To help address this global problem, a Dutch company has developed a food waste monitoring system that uses artificial intelligence to help restaurant chefs identify and measure the amount of food being discarded in their kitchens. Olive van der Veen is one of three partners at Orbisk.
We outfit the waste bin with a weighing scale underneath and a camera unit on top. And every time something is disposed of, we take a picture and our AI image recognition algorithms recognize the type of food that's been thrown away.
The data is instantly collected and shared on a dashboard to help chefs see any recurring issues.
Say you waste 10 kilos of tomatoes every Tuesday morning. That's what we'll tell you. Say your salad buffet doesn't work very well on Fridays because people are more craving for comfort foods and thus you throw away a lot of them.
That's the kind of insights chefs can now access to drive down their waste, improve their sustainability and profitability.
Croissant? There's not a chef in the world that likes to cook for the waste bin.
Vani Estes is vice president of innovation for the International Fresh Produce Association. She spoke with VOA via Skype.
So what their technology is able to do from a restauranter's point of view is really allow them through artificial intelligence to predict and to make the right amount of food.
Restaurants don't buy the machine, but pay a monthly subscription fee for the information the machine collects and shares. Since it launched in 2019, the service has helped about 100 restaurants in Europe save food waste and money, the company says. The company plans to expand to markets in the U.S. and hopes one day to eliminate food waste altogether from industrial kitchens. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
That's all the time we have on VOA Asia. Make sure to find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Gasquet in Washington. Enjoy the day.